Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
People of Suburbs Pod, we proudly present The Church, Part 2.
Okay, Patrick, so yesterday we were talking about The Church.
Yep.
With Nick Scalera and Kevin Goff, and we did not scare them away. They are back today to talk some more about this band that they love so much. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And yesterday we left off with the Church making it big in the U.S.
Right.
With Under the Milky Way. I think still to this day everybody knows that song.
Yep, definitely.
And, but here's the thing I want to ask you guys is from the Starfish album, you know, what else is on there? What else, you know, would people be interested in if they only know that song?
Well, I'm sure Nick has some favorites as well, but I think the album is actually a masterpiece. Heyday is still my favorite album, like Nick was saying earlier. But, I mean, this is like a great collection of songs beginning to end. You can listen to it as an album, but you can also just pick songs off of it and take them. Some good ones to check out for if you're just sort of casually into the Church and don't know. Spark is an interesting one because it has Marty Wilson Piper actually doing the vocals there. And it's just very different than the rest. And then the closer for Hotel Loom, the closer on the album, has been a closer for a lot of Church tours as well. Like, they play that at the end. It's just a really good song for closing out a show. Nick, do you have?
Yeah. Sure, I'll just pick out two, and then we have one more that we wanted to play. One of the things that they talked about a lot was how much they hated being in L.A., and, you know, because they weren't used to, like, driving in cars everywhere. And so a lot of these songs are about, you know, sort of reaching destinations. So
it's true.
The first track, Destination, is a great one, and North, South, East, and West, I think, are two good ones that sort of get that sort of sense of movement. But the one we had chatted a bit about off camera that is just a riff that you have to hear is the opening for Reptiles. So why don't we listen to that?
Yeah, so I remember that song for sure.
Yeah.
It was not as big as Under the Milky Way, but that was an alternative hit in the 80s.
Yep. Sure.
Right?
And that riff gets used a lot in like AM talk shows when they're breaking between.
Yeah, the breakback like music. Yeah.
Definitely. You hear that from now and then. So, but Reptile, I think they expected that one to be a bigger hit than it was, and it didn't quite get there, but still great song. They still play it live, and it's always a you know, it's one to bring the crowd back into it when they've had, you know, a quiet moment at some point. They just break that one out and the crowd goes nuts. So, you know, we're at the end of Starfish. They're touring, like Nick was saying, for a couple of years. It's time to start get back in the studio. You know, the Church wanted to actually take a fresh start, primarily Kilby, Steve Kilby, that wanted to, like, not take the same approach because it wasn't a good experience for them recording-wise. You know, they had a lot of clashes with Waddy Wachtel and Greg LaDagne, even though they were very satisfied with the output and appreciative of where they'd come to. But They just wanted to take a different approach. Record company saw it a different way. they requested to record it in Australia.
Hmm.
But the record company insisted that they take the same approach and move back to L.A. Hmm. So they did it. And I think that sort of started what was a lot of volatility in the band from that point forward, both in lineup and drug problems, all those kinds of things that, they were so bored with the process that, and they felt like it wasn't really just the 4-piece band recording together, that it was mostly being produced, that it kind of just fell apart. But when you go back and listen to Gold Afternoon Fix, that's actually the output that came out of that next session. There's a lot of good songs on it. And there's a lot of good songs that they still play today and are highly regarded among church fans. But, I think it just sort of left a bad taste in their mouth, when they talk about it today. The thing to note about Gold Afternoon Fix is that I think overall it was a good album, but it just didn't represent the church, what they were about. And they were done with that part and living in L.A. and all that. And that kind of ended that. The drummer left, Richard Plugey, as he's called by the other bandmates, was getting upset. It's important to note he didn't actually record the drums on Under the Milky Way. It was in that process they couldn't find a sound for the drums that anybody was happy with. So they ended up using a click track for that. And, he's playing on the video and plays it live, but it was definitely not there. Hmm. So that technique was also used quite a bit on Gold Afternoon Fix. Most of it is a recorded drumming. There's still some things that, and Plugey's still on the cover of Gold Afternoon Fix. But there's really only about 3 songs that he's actually playing the drums on. So it's just
interesting.
It's a little bit different.
There was one good song off of Gold Afternoon Fix, though, that people might have heard, which is Metropolis, right? That's another one that people might recognize. And I don't know if there are any others off of there that you would recommend, Kevin. Other than Metropolis, I'm really not too familiar with.
Yeah, I'd say my favorite off that one's another Marty Wilson Piper song. He did Spark previously, and he usually has one song on every album is usually how that works out. But Russian Autumn Heart, and I just think that one was it actually goes back to heyday sound period. So that would be my choice. But Metropolis definitely was the one that people would recognize for sure. So. After that sort of finished, the Gold Afternoon Fix tour was actually shortened halfway through. I actually had tickets to see them on that tour in St. Louis, and they canceled the show because ticket sales were so bad. Hmm. So it was a commercial disappointment overall, the album. They thought they'd have a lot more hits, that kind of thing. And I think it was probably just the... being forced into doing that kind of led to all that, the drug problems and all those things that are going on and the lineup changes. But you know, next album, I think they corrected a lot of those issues, but it still didn't sort of bring the magic back that they had from Heyday and you know, the early days of recording Starfish. So Priest Equals Aura came out in 92. They started recording that, and they didn't have a drummer at that point, so they recruited J.D. Daugherty, who you may be familiar with from Patti Smith Group.
Yeah, and, yeah.
He played with R.E.M. on some of the later post-Bill Berry days. I don't know if he actually played on any R.E.M. recordings, but I know he toured with them in some cases. But he became their drummer, and I think it worked out pretty well. The Priest Equals Aura album, the title is a mistake that was made in interpreting a statement. I think it was supposed to be Priest Equals Cura, but do you know that? I forget the...
Yeah, it was a misprint. You know, it was a Spanish film or something that was Priest yeah. Equals Cura, which is the correct Spanish, but was misheard as Aura, so...
Huh.
Yeah.
They say that was a mistake, but he named his first daughter, who was actually born during that album. He had twins while Priest Equals Aura was being recorded, but it's as first... daughter, he named her Aurora. So I always wondered if there was kind of like it was still intentional, even though they say it was a mistake. So, but it received really good reviews, but it really didn't do much for the church when it first came out.
Hmm.
Now, when people go back and listen to Priest Equals Aura, a lot of fans that have stuck around through all the years. Consider it to be one of their creative high points. You know, they're all one word titles,
yeah.
All the songs. So it's, you know, I think I came off a little pretentious, you know, and Kilby was, you know, throwing out all the things they did. I don't even remember if they had Gavin McCallop. In terms of the recording of this album, it, you know, just takes a completely different approach, but sounds more like a Heyday and, less poppy, and it was a little hard to get to, I think, for the mainstream people.
I mean, there's some really long songs on here too. Then, you know, this is one of the albums where I came back to this many years later because I had heard what Kevin is talking about, that there was a sort of like reinterpretation of Priest Equals Aura as their masterpiece, and I'd never listened to it. And I have to say, I've made a couple of attempts. It hasn't really clicked with me. It's definitely sort of like this is church like level 10. Like you need to sort of to sort of wash away some of your preconceptions about the hit, quote unquote, hit music to get into this. But again, you know, the lyrics are very abstract. It's hard to know what's going on, but it's definitely they were absolutely looking to sort of experiment and go outside of their comfort zone. There's no doubt about that. And sort of whether it clicks with you or not, I think it's just a matter of personal taste. But it's a challenging album, no doubt.
And if you were going to pick a song to listen to start with that you may have heard in that period, Ripple, I think, would be the one that people recognize the most.
Tiny baby, so naive, I can't believe what you believe. You were once so happy here. It may not be Eden or summer in Greece. You may not even find the golden fleece in the drag of this atmosphere. Now I know what a ringer, a delicate matter. No, I'd much rather bribe a flatty, 'cause flattery gets me everywhere. But you punctured my tires, you crossed all my wires. I brand your acolytes as a fire.
No, I'm not familiar with that song.
Okay. Yeah, I wondered if it definitely didn't get a lot of radio airplay, but I think anyone that heard Priest Equals Or at all would probably point to Ripple as being, you know, the song there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I got a chance to see the Church perform the entire album. They actually toured where they did full Starfish, full Priest Equals Aura, and then they did their new album, Untitled, at the time, Untitled number 23.
Wow.
And they just played it in order. And it's different when it is an album. You have to listen to the whole album. You can hear all the lushness, all that stuff that was built into it. You could tell it was meant to be sort of listened together. So,
Okay.
I do think, too, though, it's astonishing to think in 88 that they were sort of headlining tours and packing people in. And then, by 1990, like, tickets are unsold. And by 1992, they're just completely out of it. Like, you know, the times didn't help either. I mean, like, you know, this 92, this sort of alternative American scene is going in a totally different direction. You can see how this would not really probably have like made it on like alternative radio, you know, lists much. But in a 4-year period, they had really just dropped off the map, at least for sort of the majority of, like, you know, you're kind of even just like people into alternative music in the United States. They had just sort of, you know, but at least with this album, they made it the way they wanted to make it, which you can't say for the other two more successful ones. But this one, this was the statement they wanted to make, for better or worse.
And I remember thinking this was going to be the last Church album. It just didn't seem like it seemed so different. It didn't really get any success. And so why would you go and make another? I was kind of, like, the band's changing. Richard Plug leaving the band, like, was a pretty big deal for me personally. I thought that was kind of the end of it all. But, you know, clearly not. So, you know, the other thing about Priest Equals Or, I think, is that there was some tensions in the recording that not necessarily in the recording, but other folks not having being able to participate in the creative process. Peter Copps left the band at the end of the tour for Priest Equals Or. And that was a shock. I mean, he'd been with the band since the beginning and just was really unhappy with not being able to participate creatively, and was fighting with Marty Wilson Piper a lot from what I've read. So that kind of ended his involvement in the band for that time period.
It's an interesting point too, Nick, that you made about the times and the general environment. And it's interesting looking here, and I had not heard Priest Equal Or before, and you know, I had Heyday, I had Starfish on LP. And, you know, when they came out, that's what I got. And it's also a time when you look at the discography and nothing was coming out on vinyl anymore, right? They were coming out on CD, and it was that era. We had started into that era of CDs where, I don't know, to me anyway, you think of a band like the Church, you think of putting on an LP with one side and the other side. And it's kind of interesting that coincided with their, as Nick said, suddenly unsold tickets. Nobody's, you know, buying the records. It's kind of an interesting, you know, not coincidence, but events that came together. Confluence, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. And they may not be the only band that happened to, you know, at this time in that post Nirvana era where everything was kind of changing so dramatically.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, when, you know, I mentioned that I thought they were done at that point.
Yeah.
I remember going into a record shop. I think it was in Atlanta, home on break or something from college, and seeing that the Church had another album I didn't even follow it at that point. I didn't know that was coming out. So I had to get it, but it only had Steve Kilby and Marty Wilson Piper on it.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
And, you know, I think they took a very sort of duo approach. And when you look at the album cover and all that stuff, it's kind of very surprising. Is like, are they just an acoustic band now?
Yeah.
They were touring acoustically and taking that approach. But If I had to say I have a gap in my knowledge of the church in terms of album-wise, it would be the next one they did, which was Sometime Anywhere. Hmm. There's some very good songs on there. I've heard it, but I don't pick that one to listen very often. Hmm. And I think that's true probably for the next set of three albums for the church. There weren't too many lineup changes at that point, although Peter Copps did end up coming back on the next album. And I still don't know how he did it, because he still didn't, in terms of the creative process, he wasn't really contributing much. Hmm. He had one song on Starfish that he did called A New Season, but as far as I know, there's been no other songs where he was just singing and it was completely him. What he means by the creative process, I have to assume is about the guitar play or the interaction between him and that goes on between him and Marty Wilson Piper with the guitars, because that very much is the church sound, those two together. So, after Sometime Anywhere, which that album didn't really do much for them either. I don't even know if they toured. I know they are beyond Australia. And like I said, I'm pretty sure they were doing mostly acoustic shows at that point. But then in 96, they came out with Magician Among the Spirits, which includes if I remember, it's like a 14-minute song on it.
Wow.
But this album kind of ended their record career, where they decided they're not going to work with record companies they're not in control with at this point. And to where there was an amount of money that I think it was like something $200,000 that they were expected to be paid, had to go through all these kind of lawsuits. So it was all sort of messed up in that realm. And that's got to be boring for musicians to have to deal with that kind of stuff and have to talk about it all the time. And I think they were battling some drug issues. They weren't really communicating much. Steve Kilby was living in Sweden. Rest of the band was split between Australia, LA, and England. Hmm. And they would pretty much just get together when they were to be the church. And
yeah.
It pretty much stays like that the rest of their career. They somehow manage that. And that's important when we talk about exits of other members. But, the next three albums, really didn't make a huge dent in their commercial success. And I think that's where they're starting to learn to live with it. It's like, can we still continue as a band, sustain the loyal fan base we had, because they really did have a very loyal fan base and still do to this day. I know, because I participate in a lot of the stuff that they do with the band, and including during the pandemic. Like, it was very much, although it's mostly Kilby focused because they were all disconnected and it's kind of a different lineup now, but doing live shows, using Zoom, all those kinds of things just to connect directly to fans. And, I think that probably helps Kilby out a lot. because he was always sort of very open about what was going on with the band and that kind of stuff.
Like, yeah.
He was who they were fighting with and all that stuff was always mentioned throughout. So, but... anyway, the Hologram of Baal, I think, is, if I had to say post Priest Equals Aura, that kind of thing, I think that one's probably my favorite album because it sounds like the church.
Felt somewhat lost.
couldn't say he was feeling very fine.
It's just a very, it's somewhat dark, but it just has a lot of good songs that I think probably could have had radio hits, but didn't really make an impact beyond, you know, the loyal fan base that they already had.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And part of that becomes the trade-off, right, when you're not with a label who could put promotional money behind songs that, you know, that might get on the radio or might get, you know, on get you on TV shows or things like that, right? But you live with sort of that that level of, you know, being that band with that fan base. I think it's a really interesting phenomenon too. There are so many musicians that are like that rely on those, you know, that hardcore group of community and fans. You might even say the same about this podcast, right, Jim?
Yeah.
We rely on that core group to support us, you know, yeah, when we do something. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, and this is probably a good point to mention that the loyal fan base includes not just the church, but like all the solo efforts they did.
Yeah,
going throughout, like in between all these albums we're talking about, Kilby's putting out albums on his own.
Is that right?
Marty Wilson Piper,
wow.
As is Peter, was doing some of his own, and I think even Plugi had a. I don't know if it was a solo album on his title, but he had formed a new band and was putting those things out in between. So they all remain sort of taking their own sort of approach. It reminds me of the Connells in a lot of ways, and that you know they all have songwriting capabilities that they sometimes bring into the band. But they all do it externally in their own solo efforts. And I think that's worked out in terms of the fan base because it widens it out. Because there's people that who must have everything, must collect everything.
Yeah.
It's one of those bands.
No, I was just going to say, just getting to your point about the solo work, Kevin, I just recently listened to an hour and a half long interview with Kilby. And the interviewers asked him sort of like, what are you most proud of that you're working on? And he talked about his most recent solo album and how the process was so great. And I'm like, what? Sort of like, you know, so it does seem that probably is an indication that like the band members are probably spending more of their creative energy on this solo stuff than this sort of like,
yeah,
you know, getting back as the church. And that's sort of what's sort of really important to them at this point. But, you know, again, there's still an audience out there to consume it, and they, you know, they're happy to continue to make music, and people are out there that want to listen to it.
And if there are highlights, I would point out Kilby's worked with a lot of people too. You know, he's put out his own records, but he's worked with folks like Martin Kennedy, who he does these very, I don't want to say electronica, but they're very kind of shoegaze indie rock albums. Mm. And he's done probably 5 albums with this guy. And it's just really good, like, background listening music. I'd hate to say that if Kilby ever heard this, but, you know, you know, they're not really commercially accessible in terms of being played on the radio, that kind of thing, but they're worth listening to. They're really good songs, and I know he's been proud of those things. He's also done projects with his brothers, things like Jack Frost is a band that he had with his brothers. And I just discovered yesterday that there's something coming out that he put out a song with his brothers that didn't sound any. I'm not even sure he was singing on it, but it still sounded like a Kilby. So, go ahead.
So, a question for you guys: did they ever put out 4 solo albums on the same day?
I don't know. and a church album drops on that. I mean, that'd be the way to do it, is
right,
that you're getting the promotional capability saying, hey, we got the new church album, but you can also get all of our solo stuff.
That's right. A 5-pack.
Right.
Beautiful.
That's right.
Yeah. It's funny. Like Steve Gilby's very direct. I know that when I ordered his last album that Nick was mentioning, where he was talking about that album, like, he put a personal note in it, sent it back, and I swear to God, he addressed the thing with my name on it, on the front and the outside of it all. Like, I think it's pretty much he's running the show for his own solo career and scheduling all those things and just sort of bringing that out. But I don't quite know, like, if there's any band management or any of that stuff going on, or if it's really just the, you know, they have their fan base, they know how to connect with them now because of social media. It's made that a little more accessible for them, that they can sustain a career that way. It's kind of nice.
It is, yeah. It's really interesting. Yeah.
And they still tour. I know the church is planning to put an album out in 2022. Kilby's still promoting a solo effort. He actually has a date for that one, but I wasn't able to find one for the new church record.
Hmm.
But the, supposedly they finished recording it in October, but it's due out this year.
Hmm.
There's a lot of records there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting, Kevin, that you said you thought, which one was it? Pre-sequels Aura, that like that might be their last one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many after that. It's crazy.
They really are.
Well, and just remember Hologram of Baal. How can you forget that title?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You put out a title like that, and what do you really think is going to happen?
That's right.
Right. That's right. Hit written all over
it. Yeah, definitely. It was supposed to be named something else, too, but I think there was some objection, so they had to change it. But,
wow.
But yeah, you're right. That's definitely one you remember.
Well, I'll tell you guys that I saw the band. I was assigned to write about them to do a live review on the After Everything Now This tour. And it was at the Birchmere in Alexandria, which is a wonderful place to see a band like the Church, right? Because of the acoustics and all that, so good. And a good sized crowd, you know, kind of the room was full, completely full, but it felt like those people that were there were all were real dedicated longtime Church fans. And because of the amazingness of the internet, I mean, I don't know how accurate Setlist FM is, but, you know, I'm looking here. It was apparently April 22nd, 2002 was the show, and here's the setlist. I saw a really good show. I really did.
Definitely did. I mean, can guarantee it.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like you said, Hotel Womb, it was the last song, and they had two encores, and we got Myrrh from Heyday, and Under the Milky Way, of course, was played, and yeah, it looks like a really good show. I don't, my archives are not organized enough to actually find the review I wrote, so I'm not sure what I said about the concert, but I'm sure, hopefully I enjoyed it. Yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah, you mentioned the After Everything, Now This period. I think that was, that album kind of demarks a period of, that's when Kilby got cleaned up from some drug issues he was having. There was a lot of excitement about that album when it was put out. I don't know exactly why, to be honest, what was driving, all the interest at the time. But I just remember people were super excited about its release. And it got to a point with the listservs, or I don't know what we were doing at the time with the Church fans. The Seance mailing list is what it was called.
Oh.
And I remember saying, everyone agreeing that they were going to go out and buy two copies of the CD and give one to a friend.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, for
that's
that
grassroots.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. To do that. And there was a fella on the listserv that if anybody promised they would do that and would take a picture of the two, he would send them a CD of the Gold Afternoon Fix demos.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's I have cool. that, actually.
You did it.
It's very interesting. Yeah, I did do it. I gave it to my brother-in-law.
Nice.
And,
proselytizing for the Church.
Yeah. I don't know if it... Yeah, I don't think it necessarily translated into him being a fan, but...
Yeah.
Maybe he went back and bought another copy of Starfish.
You never know.
Maybe it helped them out at some point. I don't know. But you know, I think that period, they somewhat stabilized in their lineup, and it would stay that while for a while. And... You know, they're working on studio albums, but in between they're putting out outtakes. There's just a lot of output. It's just like, you know, it's like reaching the, Guided by Voices territory. I would think if you're looking at output, I'd put up Steve Kilby to Bob Pollard and you know, look at like how many songs have been written if you look at it that way.
Wow.
You know, collectively.
That's serious. Yeah, that is really getting up there. Yeah.
So, but, you know, they were putting out albums and touring. And so, you know, I'm pretty sure the people you would see at all these shows, and I'd be one of them, I was seeing him in Atlanta. And then when I came here, I saw him at Birchmere. I was not at the show. I was before I moved up here, but I've seen him at Birchmere and, you know, some other local venues up here. And, I try to get there every time they're in town. And, you know, I think that that's true for probably all the fans. And it does not matter if it's their best album. You know, it's kind of like the Rolling Stones who tour every year. But can you name the name of the last album that they did with that tour?
Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or what tour that was. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Another show. Jim, did you ever see him live?
No.
Okay. How about you, Nick?
That's it.
I saw him that one time in 88 and have not seen them since.
Oh, interesting.
You know, because literally, like I said, I just completely tuned out after, you know, the next album maybe. And just like when I hear Kevin talking about the output, I just, it makes me tired. I know, it's tough. I find this with a lot of bands. Like if you reach a certain age like we are, and there's that artist that people are saying, you should check them out. They've got this long, long, and I'm like, I don't like Guided by Voices. A lot of people love them. I don't have time now to go back.
Like, to start now. Yeah,
it would be a task.
Right. So, but you know, if you're like Kevin and you've stayed with it all along, then it's manageable because new stuff comes out, right? But I'd love to see them live again. I'm glad to hear that they're touring.
Yeah.
I definitely want to check that out. I'm sure they put on a great show. And, you know, also, Kevin, when this podcast comes out, if you can tell the church people to have one other person listen
there
to this podcast.
That's right.
It's perfect.
Maybe we'll get some, you know,
maybe we'll get Steve
downloads.
Kilby to listen.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He's pretty accessible.
Take a screenshot of you listening and somebody else. That's right. And we'll send you nothing.
But it's great, Nick, when you have a friend like Kevin who says, like, you know, listen to this and this and this and helps guide you through it and rekindles that interest that you may have lost, you know, because you
absolutely,
this could be overwhelming, like you said.
Come back.
If you didn't really follow this band and now you want to get into them, it's like there's so much there. Yeah,
we will
absolutely
welcome you back in, Nick. It's okay.
right
just join us. Join us.
Buy two CDs and give one to someone else, and then you could.
Somebody better watch Scott Parks to make sure he doesn't disappear down the church rabbit hole at this point.
Oh, that's happening.
Yeah, that's I think it will.
Yeah,
I do think it's important to mention one more thing about this later period is that throughout, since post of Skins and Heart, Marty Wilson Piper had been a part of that band. Around the time Untitled Number 23, which happened to be, you guessed it, their 23rd album, studio album, after that tour, Marty Wilson Piper didn't actually leave the band, but Kilby lost contact with him.
Is that right?
He was ready to go into the studio, had songs ready for the church, and you know, was trying to reach out, tried for 6 months to get a hold of Marty Wilson Piper. Never really kicked him out, but was ready to go back in the studio, and so he did. And went in without Marty Wilson Piper, and just, you know, went in interviews and things like that, just referred to him as he was unavailable.
Wow.
And you know, I don't know if that's ever been fully resolved between the two. They've talked since, but there's been two two new albums from the Church since he left. So, but you know, that did create a bit of a gap. Whereas, you know, they were every 2 to 3 years for, you know, almost, you know, 40 something years. That one they had it was a gap of 5 years before they put an album out.
Wow. Hmm. Very interesting for a band that's been together that long. It really is.
Right.
He recruited Ian Haug, who is a guitarist from an Australian band called Powderfinger.
I remember them. Yep.
I don't know anything about them, but I know that they were pretty popular in Australia.
Yeah, they were. They had one big hit. I remember that song. Yeah. My Happiness, I think it was called. Yeah.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember reading that. But they came out with that album Further Deeper in 2014, and I think everybody was relieved to hear that it still sounded like the Church. There was still that guitar interplay that needed to be there. It wasn't Marty Wilson Piper. You could definitely tell the difference, but people were okay with it. And I think people have largely accepted Ian Haug as a member. I feel bad. Somewhere along the way, Tim Pallas, the drummer, I think it was around the time of Sometime Anywhere, post that album, that he joined the band. And honestly, he's probably been the longest Church drummer of anyone, which is so surprising to me because I still see Richard Plug as the original drummer.
Yeah.
I think the fans are okay with it. They still play the songs that you expect to hear, and they still sound like the Church, but it's largely Steve Kilby's the only original member of this band to this day. So I think folks would welcome any returns that people want to make. Peter Kappas left again, if you just read into what I was saying as well. So that new album that'll be coming out this year won't include Peter on it. So.
Got it.
There's a song on Man, Woman, Life, Death, Infinity. If I could recommend, if you need a song to take us out,
that'd be great.
And it's for King Knife. And I think this one sounds very Church-like, but it's also a very Kilby solo-like song. So you can tell that he's doing, I think, the majority of the sort of song building and writing here. So,
all right. Well, thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, this has been very, very informative and fascinating.
All right. Very cool. Great. We'll play out with that. I just want to mention real quickly that if anyone else would like to comment on the Church, I know people who are into this band are really into it.
Yep.
So there's got to be some others out there. You can call and leave a message and we'll play a recording on an upcoming show. The number is
612-440-1984.
There you go. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod. All right. Thanks very much, Nick. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
This has been a delight. And stay warm. And what else we got? Anything else, Patrick?
No, I think that's it. I mean, one quick footnote I'll say is that just looking here, it looks like the Church has tour dates scheduled for May 2022 on the west coast of the United States. So, you know, maybe they'll get out our way. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm Nick Scalera.
I'm Kevin Goff. We were trying to figure out who should get next.
Yeah. All right, and we'll talk to you all later.
Along the lines of the vine of life, a new song for the king. King of nearly everything, the king, the king, the king. A dog and a unicycle, a thimble and a thrush, no rush, the show will start without you. A pony and a clown, a ticket to the
dance, no chance to show.
You want to mark that? Sorry. Anyway.